You're listening to the Chancellor's Report on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards, and I'm joined, as I am every month, by the Chancellor for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Mike Lovell. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks, Dave.
About a month ago on this program, we were talking about how the university was growing and the ability to attract talent to the campus, both on the faculty side and on the student side of things. And you said, well, you know, one of our graduates is in line to be named the new CEO of Microsoft. And that, in fact, happened.
Yeah, we couldn't be more excited and couldn't be more proud of Satya Nadella. He represents our campus so well, and it really shows that people that come to UWM can make it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So have you met him?
Sure. I met him a couple of times. He was very gracious enough to host us in April of 2000. June of 2012 out in Seattle. And I thought it was great. At the time, he was three or four at Microsoft, and he spent over an hour with myself and Pat Borger talking about the university and really helping us maybe line up some things going on within the university with the Gates Foundation, because the person who was running the Gates Foundation used to work for him. And so he was very helpful making those connections. And he was just very curious about the university and how it was changing and evolving since he had been there in 1990.
Now, he did graduate work at UWM.
Yeah, he did. He did his undergraduate work back in India and came to UWM to be part of our computer science program and get his master's degree. And from there, he started working directly after his master's degree and later on got a MBA from the University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. What were his impressions of UWM? Did he talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Experience? Yeah, he had a great experience here. He really connected with the faculty in our computer science department. In particular, we have Kay Vavarian, one of our faculty members of computer science, really became not only his mentor in terms of his academic career, but also in his life. And so they have stayed very, very close, you know, over the last 20-some years. And I think KV, the faculty member from computer science, actually still talks to him almost, you know, certainly on a weekly basis, if not communicating even more. And so it's been great because, you know, Satya really does feel a connection to the campus because the faculty were such an important part of his life.
Mm-hmm. It speaks volumes about UWM in the sense of, did he talk about why he came to UWM in the first place?
Well, again, he came here, to be part of our computer science program because he had gotten some financial support to come here, which was helpful to him coming out of India. And, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, Milwaukee and, you know, what it had to offer as well. Mm-hmm. And the one thing he was not prepared for, he told me, was the cold. He tells the funny story about how, you know, he had some bad habits when he got here. And, you know, he actually was smoking. And he said that, they had to go outside and smoke, and he said he's not sure he made it through December, and he actually was able to kick the habit because it was so cold here in Milwaukee. He said the only students that continued to smoke that first year here were the Russian students.
Well, it would be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see now as he progresses. I mean, he's only like the third CEO ever in the history of Microsoft. What he's able to accomplish there?
Yeah, and it's really fantastic because one of the things that they really highlight about Satya, and if you take a look at what he's done throughout his career, he's really, really technically sound and savvy and has developed just a number of innovative cutting-edge projects for Microsoft. And so, you know, he's going to be a great leader of that organization. And I think we should all be looking forward to the things that they're going to be producing.
Yeah, hopefully you can get him to come back and talk to everybody here.
Oh, sure. No, it's great. And to be honest with you, I've really been inundated by requests from people, as you can imagine, to get him back here to help out with one thing or another. But, you know, I'm sure that right now his schedule is just, you know, he's a little overwhelmed. Yeah, but I do know that he will come back here just because of the feelings he has for our campus and for the city.
Yeah. The other thing we talked about, and it is sort of related, we talked about this on the show last month, and that is you had created this Council on Enrollment Management. And the idea was to take a look at how we recruit students like him, but also other students, and how we retain those students and what we can do. So has the council met since we last talked?
Yeah, we've had a number of meetings. You know, we meet every week now, I'm very encouraged because I'm seeing things, you know, a lot of firsts happening, you know, within the university. And again, UWM, we haven't been all that sophisticated in our recruiting in the past. You know, we have done recruiting, but it's been very disparate. It's been spread out throughout the campus. So you have people recruiting at the school, in each school and college level. You have some centralized recruiters, and there's never been a coordinated effort. As one recruiter said the other day, a lot of times you'll have a school or college recruiter going out the back door while a centralized recruiter going in the front door of a school, and neither one of them knowing that they were going there. And so a lot of really exciting things are happening, including the, I just found out this week, there's now a buddy system. So for every centralized recruiter we have for Central Campus, they have a buddy within the schools or colleges, so making sure we have those communications going on and going forth. And so there's a we've also through this process created an admitted student team. So when a student gets admitted, we have people directly following up with them and saying, okay, do you have any questions? Do you need anything? You know, how can we help? And that touch, you know, that we really didn't have before when the students were admitted, we didn't really follow up to make sure that they actually matriculated to the campus. And so, and looking at the metrics, you know, one thing that I'm very excited about is some of those admitted students. A typical last year's rate of matriculation was 44%, and right now it's 54%, so it's 10% higher because of some of the activities that we're doing and making sure we're getting those touch points with them.
Some of those touch points are really important because, you know, I guess I don't think of UWM as being a terribly large school, but one of my favorite stories was a number of years ago walking around and a mother walking around with her daughter, and they were totally lost. And she said, we come from a small town. This is a really big place for us.
And one of the things we hear about is, again, with all the questions you may have in terms of, you know, financial aid and things at the bursar's office and, you know, things within the school or college and, you know, registering, you know, that's a lot of different offices. And then it's difficult to navigate if you have to, if there's seven or eight different places you have to go, and, you know, and we're a big university. And so what we're doing is we're trying, particularly with this admitted student team, is having one contact point that can help people navigate some of the complexities that we have within a university campus. You know, and because I'm on a campus, you know, every day, you know, sometimes I lose sight of the fact that if this is not part of your everyday life, it can be kind of confusing how you do things. And so we want to make it as easy as possible for students that want to enroll at UWM to actually get here.
You know, it sounds like this council, this group that you've pulled together is doing a lot of things right away. It's not like this is a study group that'll issue a report in 5 years.
No.
You're just doing a lot of things right off the bat.
Well, you know, and again, we talked before how important enrollments are, and, you know, we've had a downward turn for several years. So there's some short-term and long-term strategies. And right now, we're focusing the first two months or so with the council on making sure that we're doing things that will help matriculate students this coming fall. We have some further long-term strategies, but, you know, again, about widening the net of the number of students that we're trying to recruit and get to campus. But I think that the last number I saw was the enrolled freshmen were up 3.7% over last year, which is great, particularly considering that our number of applicants are down, you know, this year. And so, and the number of admitted students are down because because the applicants are down, but we're still yielding a higher rate, which I think is really important.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine whose daughter is at that point where, you know, picking college, and the comment was just how many appeals they're getting from universities, not only from the area here, but from further points away.
Yeah.
So it is competitive.
It's very competitive. And the other thing is the neat thing that we can now focus on is kind of the use of data and really, you know, segmented population. So if we find a student, because we can now do, when somebody comes into your website, you can now track where they go. And so if we find out a student, say, goes and is looking at things around our veterans affairs, or we find they're looking at a specific school or colleges, we can then go follow up with information directly to them about those areas that they're going into the website and looking at, and having the recruiter from, say, go to the business school, having the recruiter from business actually reach out and contact them to follow up, or somebody from our Veterans Affairs office.
You know. One of the things that I think about in the context of our first topic of the graduate who goes on to lead Microsoft to this effort, I think about how there's almost a mind shift on the part of the people even in this community, because this is not just a commuter school anymore.
No.
And your recruiting efforts reflect the fact that you're not just recruiting from out of Milwaukee high schools, and the expectation for where these students are coming from is changing. And so the community almost has to look at the university differently.
Well, and it's interesting because I think people that are close to the university see the changes that are happening, and they're aware of the fact that 15,000 of our students live within four blocks of campus, which is much more of a traditional university. And some of them may know that we have six recruiters now recruiting out of state, which we didn't have before, you know, because, again, we're looking at those different populations. But I think the general – much of the general population who doesn't drive by the Kenwood campus very often, doesn't know, doesn't see the changes that are happening, particularly from our infrastructure, you know, really still look at us at the university they we were 30 or 40 years ago, which was a commuter campus that drew from the seven counties around Milwaukee. And now when you think about it, where our students come from, they come from every county in the state, every state in the country, and from 80-some countries around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And when those new students arrive, there's going to be a new building online pretty soon. And you had the big topping off ceremony for the research complex.
Yeah, it was a neat day. You know, we rose the last beam for the Kenwood IRC, right in the heart of campus. And it just so happened that as you know, as was typical this winter, the half hour. Time we had set aside for the topping off ceremony happened to be a whiteout, and so all of us that spoke at the were covered at least an inch or so of snow. In fact, Rodney Swain, the dean of LS, who was the master of ceremony, at one point in time had to take his notes and pick them up and shake the snow off him because he couldn't read because they got covered so fast because it was snowing so hard. But it made for a really good video clip and pictures as they were raising the beam in the midst of the snowstorm. It was pretty exciting.
But obviously it'll be a long time before that building comes online.
Well, I think, you know, we're just looking a little over a year from now.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's amazing how fast time goes. So we're looking at early 2015 for the building being done. Because right now, you know, if anybody's been by the campus, it's been amazing how fast it's come out of the ground. You know,
right.
I can remember when we just broke ground in October of last year, of 2012, and to have pretty much the whole structure up and in place, and now they're going to be starting work on the interior. It really is exciting. And I've been told by the construction firm doing it, in spite of the terrible winter we've had, and you know, really it slowed them down a little bit, we're still on track to be on time and on budget for the project. So that's pretty exciting.
There really is a lot of energy happening. So this is like the southwest quadrant, if you will.
Yep.
The northwest quadrant, you have the old St. Mary's Hospital, yep, which is now a university property. There's just a lot of activity happening in this area.
Yeah, and you know, we know we have a lot of activity going on away from the heart of Kenwood campus, but Kenwood itself is transforming. And getting back to the students, you know, one of the great things we can tell students that we're trying to recruit here is that they're going to have a completely new physical infrastructure and space, you know, some great laboratories and classrooms that we don't have today, you know, that we will have during their tenure when they're on our campus.
And those labs are incredibly important in terms of recruiting not only undergraduates but graduates as well.
Yeah, and in terms of being competitive nationally for research projects. You know, I'm somewhat embarrassed if anyone has to give us a tour of our current chemistry labs just because they are in such a state of disrepair because, you know, they're just old and out of date. Well, when this building comes online, we're going to have state-of-the-art facilities there, you know, for people in our sciences that, you know, again, will help us recruit students and as well as – will help us recruit faculty members as well. You know.
And I think it's important to note that this really was a partnership. I mean, there's not only state money invested in this, but a lot of money was raised from others to help support this.
Sure, yeah. And again, you know, this is typically the way the state is liking to do their projects now. They like to have a fundraising component as well. And the Baders, Alfred Bader in particular – you know, he gave they gave a great gift in honor of one of our faculty members in physics, Leonard Parker, to really get this project going, and we were very thankful for them.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Chancellor Report. I'm on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Mike Lovell, the Chancellor of UWM, is our guest in conversation. There was a story here on WUWM not that long ago on the Marketplace program, which talked about a different way to pay for college, a pay-it-forward concept. And apparently there are some universities out there who are thinking about a pilot program. Apparently there's one that's already tried this, where the tuition is based differently and how you pay for things differently. Perhaps you could talk about the way it has been talked about and whether or not that's ever an option for UWM.
Well, I mean, the concept is that graduates, once they're out in the workforce, they would pay a portion of their salaries back to the campus in lieu of paying no tuition while they're students. And so it's a great concept, and there's a university called Olin College up in Massachusetts that has it's a newer university, and it's a smaller school, and they've been able to do this. And so the graduates essentially pay for the current students who are enrolled. And as you graduate and get in the workforce, then you're paying back. So you're paying for your college, you know, once you're working, which is a great concept because it means that students aren't going into debt, mm-hmm. you know, and so that's really the benefit. When you start thinking about a large public institution like UWM, you know, the question comes, you know, where do you get the money to start this kind of program up? You know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars would be required, you know, in terms of, you know, the funds that we put in place. And that's just UWM. Just think about all the other large public schools that are out there and how much money we would actually need, mm-hmm. you know, to get this off the ground. So I think it's a great concept. Obviously, it's much easier to do for a smaller school. But for somebody like UWM, you know, it could be challenging for us, certainly.
Yeah, and it was even said in that report that while that sounds really good when you're a 17 or 18-year-old, when you're 50 years old, you're going to really want to ante up that chunk of your current income to your old alma mater.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of twists and turns around yeah. that.
And because you're paying a percentage every year of your earnings back yeah. to the university.
You could pay more that way.
Yeah.
If you're successful.
Yeah,
if you happen to be the CEO
yeah.
of Microsoft.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, exactly.
But there is a lot of discussion. I'm sure you get this all the time as you talk to students and you talk to parents about the rising cost of education. Those articles appear on a regular basis in the newspapers. There's got to be some thinking about whether or not we can continue to have a system the way we have right
yeah.
now.
And really, this gets to the point, you know, we've talked before. Of all the students in the UW system, our students actually graduate with the most debt. It's over 20,000, and we've talked about how our students, our median income is 55,000 a year. So the families of our students, most of them can't help our students get their degrees, so they're paying for it themselves, trying to work part-time jobs. And so, you know, right now I would say compared to 20 or 30 years ago, when you could work a minimum wage job for the summer – and raise enough money to pay for your schooling. You know, today we're not even anywhere near that, you know, in terms of the way things have changed in terms of higher education and the costs. And so really we have to think about the model of higher ed. You know, I think it's a discussion we have at a national level because we don't want to make it exclusive just for people who have the means to pay for it, you know, ahead of time, because we still need those first generation from some of the lower income parts of our country to be able to get higher ed. And, you know, I've talked before, I think we've talked about technology and how it's changing higher education. Well, the one benefit that technology provides, and it's in every sector, not just higher ed, it'll drive down the cost of education if we do this in a thoughtful and right way without reducing the quality. And so that's one way. We talk about the flex degree option we've talked before. Students can pay for competencies or just for, you know, they can get their degree by taking the life experiences and getting some credit for that as well as going through some general online coursework mm-hmm. as well. And so that, as you're kind of paying as you go and paying for certain things that you care about, you know, maybe you would incur nearly as much cost in terms of the debt.
I mean, it's probably related to the economy, but it seems like, you know, for the first time in recent years, there's been a lot of discussion and a lot written about whether or not it pays for people to go on to college,
yeah.
considering the debt that they have. And that discussion didn't take place 10, 20 years
no.
ago.
And actually, I just read a report this week that showed overwhelming data that it still pays to go get your college degree. You have so many more opportunities. You make, you know, over your lifetime, make so much more, you know, money that it's definitely worthwhile. But because people are graduating with so much debt, people are wondering, it's natural. You know, mm-hmm. is this really worth it? And at the end of the day, you know, it really is worth it. But certainly digging out of that hole means, you know, a lot of times you're starting your family later, you're buying your house later. You know, it's just, it's difficult.
Yeah, it has a greater impact. Let's talk about some of the things that have been going on campus. You know, we talk about UWM not only as an institution where people come to learn, but how UWM contributes to the dialogue of the community and the world. And the recent George Kennan Forum was a good example of that.
Yeah, and this was really a fantastic program where it was sponsored by our Center for International Education, or World Affairs, Institute for World Affairs, and they brought two just fabulous speakers, James Galbraith from University of Texas and Yanis Varoufakis, I think his name is, professor of economics at the University of Athens. And the topic they discussed was absolutely fascinating. They talked about, you know, escaping austerity and debt, and what they really focused on was public institutions are, you know, across the country and the world, for that matter, are really in an economic crisis. They're all struggling and trying to find ways in meet, you know, our campus being no different than that. But the economies of the world, in particular, money being carried forward by corporations is at an all-time high. Mm. So it's not that the economies of countries like the U.S. and the world aren't doing well right now, because they are, but why is the public sector, you know, in such you know, crisis financially? And so this is kind of what they talked about, and we had several hundred people come for this, and it was very it was a very good lecture series, and you know, I think anybody who was there, you know, learned something about the way the world is working.
Yeah, and you also involved some faculty from UWM in that discussion.
Yeah, well. And actually, we had one of our faculty, Jeff Summers. He's an associate professor of political economy and public policy. He's a senior fellow at Institute for World Affairs, and he actually served as the moderator and was asking the questions and, you know, some very probing questions. So he did just a fabulous job in you know, helping not only track the speakers but actually making the program phenomenal.
So back when you were dean of the engineering school a long, long time ago, 2010, I know that you offered to host a state robotics championship at UWM, and that event continues.
Yeah. And getting back, this kind of relates back to the recruitment piece we talked about earlier. You know, one of the things that is very, you know, really helps get students certainly interested in UWM is getting them on campus, you know, when we're still in high school or middle school, to make them understand that UWM is a great place to be and it's very comfortable and safe. And so one of the things that we did back in 2010 is we, you know, volunteered to do this. It's called the First Tech Challenge. So it's a little bit different. There's a first robotics competition. There's several levels. And so the first robotics is the robots are much bigger and more expensive. And the First Tech Challenge is a little bit smaller, but still is technically advanced and doesn't really require as much outside technical expertise to help the students move along. And so this is a great option for a lot of schools that may, particularly those are more rural areas, they may have access to, you know, engineers from Rockwell or Johnson Controls that would help their team build the robots and form them. And so we had 28 teams from around the region, you know, not just from Wisconsin, but from neighboring states come to our campus to compete in this First Tech Challenge. And it was another very exciting event. And again, we had, you know, several hundred 14 to 18 year olds on our campus.
14 to 18
yeah.
year olds.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And it's great because one of the things I really liked about this is they talk that the focus of the First Tech Challenge is around gracious professionalism. And so it's very competitive, but they're also learned to be very collaborative with the other team. So actually there's times when one team's robot breaks and the other team actually helps them fix it.
Oh, cool.
Even though they're competing with each other. And so it's many of our corporate sponsors stepped up to make this a great event, including Johnson Controls, Eaton, and Generac, you know, and locally. And so, and again, it's just great to have, you know, students. And first, you know, obviously this is sponsored through an engineering school because, you know, these are potential
yes.
students we'd like to matriculate to our campus.
The other thing was really fascinating. I heard that in mid-February there was something on campus called Geek Week where folks got to demonstrate their geekiness, and apparently they got to challenge you as well.
Yeah, so this was a really good concept. And the students actually came up with this as they wanted to have Geek Week and celebrating, you know, we're all geek about something was kind of the motto on this. And we had a whole week full of very interesting things. And one of the highlights for me was actually getting to see Bill Nye.
Oh, yeah.
He came on Monday night to kick off the week, and it was just phenomenal. He lectured for about 2 hours, and he was just as entertaining as you can imagine, you know, and interesting. And kind of his blend of science and entertainment. And then actually after about 2 hours, he started taking questions. I actually left after another half hour because I think he took questions for another hour and a half or so from the students about all kinds of different things. He was very gracious with his time, and he's not only is he, you know, a great entertainer in person in science, but he's also a pretty nice guy, and we came to find. So
yeah. So let's get to the important stuff. So you had 16 teams. They narrowed down the whole thing, and then the winner of that took on your team.
So yeah. So we had it's really just a general trivia competition where we had the schools and colleges. Each one had a team that was competing along with some different parts of campus, and so they had a 16 team competition, and then the winner of the tournament then took on my team. Which consisted of myself and Michael Liberty, and then two students, and one of them actually was my daughter, Marissa.
I was going to say a little ringer action going on here.
So, and Michael and I laughed because the two students, they took about 80% of the questions and carried the weight for the team. It was phenomenal, particularly those ones around pop culture. But the winning team from the tournament was from the Lubar School of Business, and I'm very proud to say that I think we beat them 11-1 in the final. So yeah. So
do you want to divulge what your geek was, what your area of expertise was?
Well, I think most of the things around science and engineering was my area of expertise.
Did you get that Lady Gaga question?
No,
right?
No.
We just got a couple of minutes here, but I know we should update where things are going with winter sports, because we're really smack dab in the middle of all of that.
Yeah, and almost all the winter sports are really entering into their final championship season. Just this week, our swimming and diving are competing in the Horizon League Championship, and both our men's and women's teams are right there going into the weekend, looking at the hopefully the rate that near the top of the standings. Hopefully we can win that, and obviously our men's and women's basketball teams are just wrapping up their seasons and heading into the Horizon League tournaments themselves. And
men's basketball team did very well this year by comparison to previous years.
Yeah, last year that we had a down year. Last year, this year we've done much better. We hope the trend continues over the next few years. We have indoor track is competing as well, and so there's just. It seems like there's always something going on in athletics on our campus. And we've talked before about, how it's great that in all of our athletic programs, we have their students first and athletes second. And, it's great to see our students be successful in the classroom and also on the playing field.
Mm-hmm. But there still is quite a variety of sports here. I mean, you talk about basketball, you talk about the swimming, you talk about the track and field. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, but I want to thank you once again for joining us today. Mike Lovell, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Good talking with you.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
You've been listening to the Chances Report on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards. Thanks for listening. All right. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
Go ahead.
At UWM, brilliance begins with an idea. This is UWM Chancellor Mike Lovell with an invitation to learn more about the brilliant ideas being developed in Milwaukee's largest university. The 2014 UWM Research Report, complete with stories, photos, and videos, is now online. Read all about the university's latest research initiatives at Research Report, all one word, UWM.edu.
That's okay. They'll edit that.
Yeah.